Fight in the Fields. It's a Paradigm production, and it's sound roll 62 and camera roll 130. And next takeoff is Leroy Chatfield, take 4. We're in Sacramento, 124.96. And the production is Fight in the Fields.
Okay, so just one more comment on the fast.
Wait. Mark it. Take 4.
When I ask something, you have to sort of incorporate that so we know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
What role did the Jamara court case play in the fast?
The growers, specifically Jamara Corporation, was bringing an injunction against the union based on the accusation that the union was engaging in violent activity and was of a threat to safety and should be stopped by the courts. Now, the fast was a way also for Caesar to make a statement about the fact that the union was committed to nonviolence and that he was willing to put his personal health at stake to maintain that commitment, and that it wasn't true. However, the court had its hearing in Bakersfield.
You were there.
Well, yes, I was there, but also 4,000 or 5,000 farm workers were there. And we figured out a way to transform the Kern County Courthouse into a church of sorts by having farm workers line all of the corridors. I think it was a 5-story building, in total silence, and remaining in the courthouse for several hours, treating it as if it were a house of worship, as if it were a church, and paying respect to the fact that Caesar was making a personal religious statement about nonviolence, and yet he was being hailed into court to try to answer false charges. And the judge, I don't think he dismissed the case, but in view of the circumstances, postponed it, or they put it off until another day.
Yeah, the other thing that the fast brings up that I'd like you to talk a little bit about is that the farm workers movement was very good at presenting things symbolically. There was a certain symbolism that really spoke to people about things like the fast.
Well, one of the things that you learned in working with Caesar in the movement was that you either had time or you had money. And the currency of the movement was time, since we didn't have any money. So we had to be more creative, and we had to use symbols, and we had to prepare things and plan events. Marches, for example, vigils, for example. Standing in silence, for example. We had to develop ways for masses of people to make personal statements about the injustices of their situation. Since we couldn't afford TV advertisements or radio advertisements or newspaper advertisements, or that was the only way we had to publicize the injustice of the situation in which we found ourselves.
And in general, was it effective?
I think it was very effective.
I'm thinking, for example, of starting the human billboards on Prop 22.
Well, I think these kind of events, these kinds of symbolic events where workers and supporters put their bodies where their beliefs are, either on the picket line, for example, or in the Safeway parking lots, working on the boycott, or out fundraising, or out demonstrating in some way, or on a march from Delano to Sacramento to confront the governor of the state of California. All of those kinds of things captured the imagination of people everywhere. I mean, the boycott itself became an international movement. There were more repercussions in the grower community about grapes not being unloaded in Europe, for example, than there was in California. It had a ripple effect that was like a tidal wave by the time it came back to this country. And it put the growers in a situation where they were waging battle with variables that they had no knowledge of and couldn't comprehend and couldn't come to grips with and couldn't use money to buy their way out of it or to paper it over or to change the agenda. The poorest of the poor, in this case the farm workers, were able to set the agenda for their movement that was captured by the media and promulgated worldwide, and there was no letting go of it.
Yeah, a couple of, there was this period, say from 70 to 73, where the growers, in effect, went on the offensive legislatively. That was something they knew how to do. They could promote laws.
Right. The growers had, since the growers had access to money, they could hire an initiative to be put on the California ballot to literally make illegal farm worker unions. And this is what they tried to do. They paid in the magnitude of $400,000 or $500,000 to gather signatures to qualify an initiative for the ballot. This was in 1972. Now, unfortunately for them, some of the methods used to gather the signatures were absolutely and totally fraudulent, unbeknownst to the growers. They paid good money to people who scammed them and who gathered signatures by opening telephone books and writing down pages and pages of names and addresses, or circulated petitions in California to lower food prices, and then turn those signatures in to qualify the initiative. And when the union was able to gather enough data to bring that evidence to Jerry Brown, who was then the Secretary of State, and after he made his investigation and turned it over to the Los Angeles District Attorney, who, because of his investigation in LA County, 3 days before the election, brought 7 indictments against those who qualified the initiative. Believe me, it was money poorly spent. And it's another example of, since the farm workers didn't have the money to fight back in the initiative, we had to find other ways to fight the initiative. And we fought it with people and organizing communities against it, uncovering people who said that their name appeared on the qualifying list for the initiative, but the fact is that they had never signed anything, didn't know anything about it. So,
and in fact, the initiative was defeated.
The initiative was defeated, handily defeated, right?
Next up is Chatfield, take 5 up.
Since we've been talking about legislation, let's move up to 1975 and the Labor Relations Law. And I don't want to talk about setting it up. We've been through the politics with other people, but I want to talk about what it felt to be be in your position, to be one of the people that was put on the board to administer the law that gave farm workers a chance to elections for the first time. What was that like for you?
It was very difficult for me.
I knew, since being on the board was...
Being named by the governor to the Agricultural Labor Relations Board was a very difficult position to put me in. I felt very uncomfortable. I felt that I certainly could be fair and would be fair in terms of serving on the board, but in the course of getting the Agricultural Labor Relations Act passed, I took a lot of heat and even some abuse, if you will, from former colleagues. I don't know if it was unfair or not, really.
Well, I asked Jerry Cohen, you know, I said, well, look, were you and Leroy playing the Dog and Pony Act, or was there some real disagreement about moving forward on the law? And he felt that they had to pressure you. I saw it that you were on the same side. How did you see it?
Well, I saw it differently yet again.
We're changing to camera roll 131. Next up is Leroy Chatfield, take 6.
Yes, Steve?
Okay, this is take 6. Marker?
Okay, so you were just saying that being on the board was an impossible no-win situation.
Yes, being on the Labor Relations Board for farm workers was a no-win situation for me. Regardless of which or what decision I made, I would either be considered a sellout to the movement and to the union from whence I came, or I would be attacked by the grower community as being unfair, biased, and not a proper board member. So it was very uncomfortable. I didn't want to be on the board. I was appointed to the board. I was confirmed to the board by the California Senate. And I served for a period of time. It was a very difficult experience for me. One time I was personally attacked by members of the Teamsters Union. And a guard had to be posted at my home for several weeks.
I mean, all that stemmed from an issue of perception, that you were perceived as having a certain set of values, and that would...
Oh, that's right. It was anticipated and perceived by both sides that either I would be all one way or all the other way, and there would be no judgment that I would exercise as Leroy Chatfield. And it was a totally unfair position, and one I was stuck with.
But yet, going back to the union experience, you know, the Alinsky credo, if you will, is to polarize the situation. You know, you're with us or you're against us. These are the good guys. So coming out of that, wouldn't that be a legitimate way for people to judge you or not?
No, it is a way for people to judge me, but I anticipated that is how I would be judged. That is why I did not want to be on the board. But Jerry Brown, the governor at that time, felt that it was politically necessary to have a balance of board members. Since he was putting someone on the board from the grower community, he felt that he should also put someone on the board who was from the farm worker community, and he chose me. And it was a 5-member board, and so there were one representative from the growers, one representative from the union, and 3 others at large, if you will. But I survived, I made it, but I didn't like it.
Do you think you were able to do anything good in the process?
Well, the good that I felt that I was able to help with, and all the other board members who served initially was that in the first 2 months after the existence of the board, more than 40,000 farm workers participated in secret ballot elections, and that's for the first time in our country. And just that alone helped to diffuse a very, very volatile situation in California between employers and workers, at least in the agricultural industry. So from that point of view, it was worth the pain, the personal pain, if you will, of going through that experience. The other reality was that the legislature did not appropriate enough money to finance the board properly. And so when those funds were expended after, perhaps 6 or 7 months, then certain legislators who were beholden to the agricultural industry were able to stop future funding for the board, and the board shut down for a period of time. And so that was a, we sort of went backward to business as usual in terms of who had the power in California and who didn't.
Well, yeah, it's silly to expect a lot of change in those basic relationships. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your own experience, the years you spent with CSER and what that meant in your life and how it shaped what you went on to do or defined who you were as a person.
Well, one of the reasons why that I left religious life, Catholic religious life, to join the Farm Workers Union was because of CSER. I felt that here was a man who was totally committed to poor people, to people who had no voice, to people who were treated as pieces of property or as slaves. He was totally committed to this work. He lived in voluntary poverty. He practiced what he preached. And I don't know if it was natural to attract a person like myself, but I have to say that I felt attracted to this type of person and to this type of cause. I had also very strong beliefs about social justice and the rights of people, and which also stemmed from my religious upbringing. It changed my life completely. It was through the Farm Workers Union that I met my wife. We became married during that time, had 5 daughters during that time. It taught me a lot about life, people, organizing. In fact, when people ask me, well, what did you learn from CSER? If you had to boil it all down, what did you learn from CSER? One of the things I think that I learned from CSER is how to organize, how to create something that did not exist, how to make something out of nothing. And honestly, having learned that has served me very well in a wide variety of careers that I've held since and hope to have more of.
So it's those experiences and values and skills aren't just peculiar to the farm workers movement, they can have other applications.
Many of the things that I learned in the farm workers movement about how to organize, how to motivate people, how to accomplish something, how not to have to rely on money to get anything done, are transferable skills to many, many other types of human activity. Hopefully activity on behalf of poor people, but not necessarily so.
One last giving that to Larry Rathdrake. But then we also saw some footage of you on the march to Sacramento, and there, instead of a clerical robe, you're wearing a leather jacket, you're smoking a cigarette, your hair is getting longer. What did it mean personally in terms of your life changing, going from Garces High School to Albany Street?
Well, well, you have to, it was a complete change of lifestyle, because having grown up in a monastery setting and living the regimen of a religious person, and having done so for more than 15 years, and then to step into the 1960s in Delano, California, in the state of California, free, unfettered, unknowledgeable, was a startling experience, and something that I learned to adjust to over a period of time. But it was different than being in a monastery, I'll tell you that.
Okay, let's stop here. Any final thoughts?
Test.
Half an hour is too tight, but
okay.
Soon after that as
yeah,
I could.
Yeah, sure. No, that's fine. And so the Yitzhak moves there.
This is going to be the end of Sound Roll 62.